Welcome to the Global Business Women's Pod, brought to you by the Greater Houston Women's Chamber of Commerce. I am Susan Dyson and proud to be the CEO, President, and Founder of the Chamber. Please join us for this empowering podcast every Thursday at 6 p.m.
Finding new approaches to problem solving to get the results you desire might be closer than you think.
I talk with people all the time who get stuck, whether they're individually stuck or their team is stuck on something. And I just really love that this is a way to help them see new possibilities and try new things that can help them get unstuck.
That's coach, author, and researcher Dr. Suzanne Vicberg. And I'm Kim Crisfort, Chief Innovation Leader within Executive Accelerators at Deloitte, and your host of Breakthrough by Design. On this episode, we're mixing things up and bringing in a special guest host, Paul Silverglate, leader of Deloitte's Executive Accelerators team within Clients and Markets Growth. Paul sits down with Suzanne and me to talk about our latest book, The Breakthrough Manifesto, 10 Principles to Spark Transformative Innovation. And with that, I'll turn it over to you, Paul. Welcome.
Thanks, Kim. And welcome to the show as a guest, as well as with your co-author, Suzanne Vicberg. I'm so excited to dig in this book. But before we go there, I know you've been using the Breakthrough Manifesto for quite some time in your day-to-day work in the greenhouse. Tell me a little bit more about how it came to be.
I do feel like I should share a story of the origins of the Breakthrough Manifesto because it actually was born in a cafe in some ways. We had been doing work in the Deloitte greenhouse and before that in the lab for years until one day I was having a little coffee or something with Ash Robinson, one of my colleagues. And he said to me, "Why don't we have a manifesto?" And I said, "What do you mean a manifesto?" And he says, "A manifesto, something that makes manifest the principles that we follow and that we believe." And it was an interesting question because we had so much science and field research behind what we were doing to help our clients get to breakthrough, but we had never translated that into an easily accessible list of principles, a way to make manifest all of those things that we did. And so we took on that challenge and we decided to go through and distill the essence of what we were doing into the 10 Breakthrough Manifesto principles.
I love it. And that I think is what is so wonderful about this book. I've read it. It's, I'm going to say, the best business book that I've read. I haven't read many, but it's one of the best for sure. But for our audience who hasn't read it yet, and we'll go back to those 10 principles that are part of that manifesto. How do they fit together? How do you use them? How do they come to life?
So there are 10 principles, but they don't need to be used all together, all at the same time. They're really designed to mix and match and also to use in the moment where it makes the most sense for you. And you'll hear a lot from Dr. Suzanne Vicberg about the ways that our own individual preferences, working styles, and chemistry could actually make us more eager or more willing to do some of these principles than others. But we really recommend that these are things that you consider in combination. And a lot of it also is part of a broader journey. So often people think about breakthrough as a single moment in time, and it isn't. It's a whole process to be looking around in a new way so you see opportunities when they're coming toward you. It's about thinking differently and ideating and shaping different choices. And it's about bringing other people along so that when you actually do make a change, it's a change that is meaningful and that lasts.
And I'll just add in here that each of these principles has a chapter written about it, but we want to make sure that they are truly practical and that people know just how to apply them. So in the book, we have 5 methods that people can use to apply each of these principles. So just as a couple of examples, in the Strip Away Everything chapter, we talk about a method for defying constraints. So we ask you to think about all the things that are in the way of solving your problem, like maybe you don't have a big enough budget, or maybe your talent isn't located in the right city. And we ask you to say, what if that constraint wasn't true? How would that affect your problem solving, your brainstorming? And when you do that, you can go in new directions that possibly will offer up something you can use, even if your constraint is then back in place. And we find that kind of thing can really help people get more creative. So 50 methods in the book to help people get beyond just the concepts and the ideas to really practical applications of all of the principles.
Dr. Seuss, I love how you finished that with practical. And that is what I really love about the book, is it makes it very practical. Like innovation and breakthroughs, they seem mysterious. This book, I think, really goes a long way to demystifying innovation and breakthroughs. So you've been using in the greenhouse these 10 principles, and I love the names of each one. They're each provocative in their own right. You've been using these principles for 10 years. What happened now that caused you to want to write this book? What was the driver behind writing the book now and putting this out there? And what do you want to be the result of us putting the book out there at this point?
Really what happened was Kim said, "Suzanne, are you ready to write another book?" Because we wrote a book together several years ago. But for me personally, I mean, I love to learn new things and I love to go really deep into the things that I learn. And when I get really interested in something, then for me, the next best thing is to be able to share it with others. So books are kind of a natural way to do that. You can go in so many directions and use so many different lenses. And that format for me, I do tend to want to go on and on about things. So a book is a way to really make sure you can cover all the ground that you want to. And in terms of what I want people to take away, I'm also a coach. And so I talk with people all the time who get stuck, you know, whether they're individually stuck or their team is stuck on something. And I just really love that this is a way to help them see new possibilities and try new things that can help them get unstuck.
I love that, Suzanne. I must admit, writing a book with you was part of the draw. It was a great experience the first time and didn't disappoint the second time either. I think from my perspective, we were doing originally all of these experiences designed around the Breakthrough Manifesto principles, and the principles were a little hidden from the outside world. They were things that our team used, and it was the belief that drove us to do better things and to experiment and innovate ourselves. And one day we put the manifesto up on the wall, and suddenly people were seeing these provocative statements and they were sort of saying, gosh, what's that about? Tell us more. And we began incorporating the principles explicitly into our work with our clients. It was fascinating the result that that had. We heard a lot of people say it was just so powerful to start thinking differently about these things and really, as you said, Paul, to take the sort of mystery out of innovation. You know, there's a process that you can follow. And the why now is interesting. Why now? Well, the world is at such an interesting place right now with all these complex advances with technology innovations and societal problems and geopolitical issues. And we realize that many of the challenges that people are facing every day are challenges that require a new way of thinking. And we believe that the Breakthrough Manifesto is a very helpful way to break that down into things that you can constantly be doing to build that muscle so that you can look to make positive change in the world.
What I love about this is we have 10 years of history and 10 years of storing using these principles. I love how stories bring things to light. If you could for a moment, think to, are there particular stories of where we utilize these principles to help an executive or, you know, his or her team get unstuck? That's maybe a success story, or even ones where we tried and they didn't get unstuck. That's always, I think, illuminating kind of where it didn't work, if you would like to share those as well. And then also maybe a favorite moment as you were writing the book that you thought, oh, this would be great in the book, or even a moment that you're like, yeah, this is a cool moment, but it didn't make it into the book.
Paul, I'll share an example of a dial-up the drama story. And I'm sharing that one because I think dial-up the drama is one of those principles that sometimes people eye roll and they're like, why do we want more drama? Like, that doesn't seem like a good thing. Why are you encouraging that? And this story is one where we had a group of people who were trying to solve a really difficult societal issue. They were dealing with homelessness and trying to think about how we could bring together corporations and government and not-for-profit to do something different. A lot of the conversations had been very academic in nature and were theoretically maybe quite good ideas, but they just didn't seem to land and no one had felt like we'd gotten to the answer. So what we did was we actually designed a series of stations where they would go into the dark and they would just listen to stories of these people who were living on the streets or who were having trouble getting access to care. And it completely transformed the conversation by heightening the drama of their context, by humanizing the issue. We were able to change the nature of the conversation and really solve for the human beings and not just the theory behind all of this. We were able to engage people quite differently and they got to more creative solutions.
I'll just add to that, that in terms of favorite moments or maybe even surprises while writing the book, you know, some of these principles, as you mentioned, Paul, they're provocative and the way that we talk about them can be provocative. But when it comes to applying them, then sometimes there's quite a bit of nuance involved. So I'll just give an example of the Get Real chapter. You know, we say to get real, show more of your human self and be vulnerable at work. And what we found in some of our research is that is the principle that people are least likely to claim they're already doing. And when you ask people to do this, and when you think about why they're not doing it, you uncover lots of complicated reasons that people hesitate to get real with their colleagues, to show who they really are, or to just really be more human and maybe strip away some of those expectations about what we think it means to be a professional. And so for me, it was really fun and engaging and interesting to be able to dig into some of those nuances and really talk about how do you decide how real to get, you know, and under what circumstances are you getting real and why are you getting real? Like thinking through, why are you sharing what you're sharing? And are there certain kinds of things that you can share that are more beneficial for getting your team to break through? Like, for example, admitting to failures or mistakes that you've made in the past that can help other people be more likely to take a risk, which is one of the things that really helps teams get to breakthrough. So I really appreciated digging in and being able to do all of that as we wrote the book.
I love it. I also love how the book is so based on research. And even your comment there about the power of getting real and showing a vulnerability, it seems oxymoronic that showing vulnerability is a power move, and it absolutely is, right? And how that can help get to a breakthrough. Tying into that, I want to drill down onto barriers to breakthrough. What did your research show about the way teams can overcome barriers?
We have quite a large study on this that we conducted over a number of years. We have more than 28,000 professionals from thousands of different organizations who answered our questions about what are the things that might discourage you from contributing your ideas, your questions, your opinions when you're in group discussions. And of course, when teams are trying to get to breakthrough, a lot of that work that they do together, the conversations they have, the brainstorming they do, really requires that people are willing to engage and contribute. Because if people are just sitting around the table and holding back, then you're not likely to get there. So we all probably know about psychological safety, which has been talked about in the literature and in the media for very good reason as one of the things that can get in the way of teams getting really creative together. What we were interested in is what else? So yes, psychological safety is really important, but what else might keep teams from getting to breakthrough? And what we found in our study was four other categories of barriers that hold people back. One of them is perceptions of value. And this is about whether people think they have something valuable to offer. And what we found was that people sometimes think if they're not an expert in the topic, or they didn't have a chance to review data in advance, or they didn't have a chance to prepare in advance for the discussion, that that means they don't have anything valuable to add. And what's so interesting about this is, you know, one of the recommendations we make and that you'll hear many other people make when it comes to getting creative is to adopt a beginner's mindset, to bring fresh perspectives by pretending like you don't know anything about a topic. The cool thing is, if you're actually not an expert and don't know much about a topic, you don't even have to pretend. You automatically have a beginner's mindset. So we want to help people see that there is value in what you have to offer, even if you don't know much about a topic at all. That is, by definition, a fresh perspective. So that was one. The second is about impact. If people think that the topic is not important or interesting, or that the discussion itself is not going to ultimately have an impact, like maybe they think they've just been asked for their opinion as a courtesy, they're not as likely to engage and contribute. So it's really important that people get interested. Dialing up the drama is one of the ways we can get people's interest, but they also need to know that something is going to happen as a result of this discussion and me taking a risk to offer up my ideas. The third is about team dynamics. So a lot of people say, well, everyone's talking at once, so I can't contribute, or no one else is engaging, so I don't want to contribute, or people aren't being honest, or just two people are dominating the conversation. There are so many things about the way teams interact that can keep people from contributing. And so really paying attention to not just getting a bunch of diverse perspectives in the room, but looking at how do we talk to each other? How do we work together? And making sure all those perspectives are welcome. And then finally, belonging. If people don't feel like they belong, if they don't feel they can be themselves or get real, if they don't trust each other, they don't feel comfortable, then they are not as likely to share. So building belonging and trust among teammates is really, really important for getting to breakthrough.
I want to pause for a second and maybe go back to something maybe I even should have asked at the beginning. Why is innovation so important? Why is having a breakthrough so important? Is innovation important because you have something innovative that you have to share with someone? Is it people want to be associated with a business that is innovative? Is it people want to be associated with people who are innovative and think of new ideas? Why is it that innovation is such an important topic?
I love that question, Paul, because human beings are funny in that we actually often don't like change. We like things the way they are. We sort of don't want to get outside the status quo or our comfort zone. And at the same time, we change all the time. We're constantly evolving as human beings overall and as individuals. And I think that the answer has multiple facets to it. We need to innovate on a world scale to be able to tackle many of the bigger societal issues and world issues we're facing. But on a much more personal level, all of us have untapped potential that sometimes we're afraid to explore. Check Your Edge is the chapter that really goes into that in more detail. We have potential that we can discover. And if we do discover that potential and see how to unlock it, we can be much more satisfied in our lives. We can do things for others in a new way, engage differently. We can show up differently. One of the things I love about the way Suzanne describes Get Real is that part of getting real is maybe stripping away some assumptions about yourself. And so what we're doing when we're innovating is we're sort of taking all of those principles in combination, starting with ourselves. And when we unlock that broader potential and can really do something meaningful for ourselves, for our teams, and for the broader world.
What I'm hearing you say is it's kind of a human attribute to want to create and to want to do something different. And maybe, and you tell me if the analogy works, but it's kind of like if you like to sing, you still could benefit from singing lessons. If you like to draw, you can still benefit from going to art school. If humans want to build, they want to create, they want to think of things differently. And what the book helps them do is to do this and to do it better, or to demystify it and to really unlock their really true potential to innovate. Is that fair, or is that a stretch?
I would say that everybody's capable of innovating, and some people are eager to do it, and other people need a little bit of a nudge. And there's aspects of that that relate to the reasons that people want to engage or not that Suzanne has discussed with the research we've done. There's aspects to that which are people's style, the business chemistry work that we've done. But everybody has the capacity. And I actually think we saw this when we had the global pandemic with COVID. People were all forced to change and to innovate. And it was a time when you had fewer alternatives to that. You couldn't just sit comfortably by in your comfort zone. And so I think that, yes, everybody has the capacity, Paul. And I think this book was meant to make it easier for people who perhaps are more reluctant to step outside of that comfort zone, and to give new tools to amplify the ability of those who are eager to create and eager to get out there and innovate.
And I'll just add, of course, going back to research again, we took a look at these principles with a sample of about 8,000 people. We asked them, are you doing these things? What we found was the business chemistry type that we're most likely to hear is using these principles was pioneers. Those are our creative folks. But what was interesting is we asked them, is your team doing these things? And all types said they were doing these things more than their team was. So that's something, you know, that is known as the Lake Wobegon effect, that we all think we're doing better than everybody else at most things. But it was pioneers who saw more distance between what they thought they were doing and what they thought their teams were doing. What's interesting about that for me in relation to the book is this book offers ways for those pioneers to bring others along with them. So if you think you're the one who's always innovating and you are already very creative in your problem solving, and maybe, you know, if you were not having to drag all these other people with you, you could easily get to breakthrough. Well, this is a way that you can help all of those other people get on board and get more creative in the way that they're thinking. And if you're one of those people who maybe doesn't, you know, do this as naturally, then you can use the book to help yourself get more creative in how you're thinking.
Suzanne, that is such a great point, because innovation is one of these words that can mean everything and nothing, depending on how you think about it. And we have really been talking about innovation in terms of transformative innovation, meaning you are making something new, creating something new that creates positive change. And that could be positive change for yourself, but more often than not, we're talking about positive change on a larger scale. And you cannot do that alone. It may require you changing yourself first, but it does require bringing others along on that journey.
We're calling it a business book. And that's where one would find it in their local library or bookstore, if anyone goes to those two things anymore. That being said, who gets the most value from this? Is this really a business-only book? Who out there could get value from this, and in what regard?
Human beings will get value out of this book. I mean, maybe dogs. My dog seems to really like it, but I think it's fascinating to us because this definitely started as a business-oriented thing. It was a set of principles we used every day with our clients, but it's very clear to us that every single person has the potential for breakthrough. And in fact, this entire podcast was inspired by that idea, and we're interviewing people from all sorts of different backgrounds and professions and walks of life, because we want to hear their stories about how they go on this journey to create a different mindset and really ideate on different opportunities and then bring those to life. So I believe that people who are looking for inspiration, people who are maybe needing encouragement to step out of the comfort zone, people who are looking to up their game with innovation, and people who are looking to make bigger change, maybe tackle something bolder than they've tried before.
What do you do on your team to encourage breakthrough thinking? And what advice do you have to other leaders that are listening in? What can they do on their teams to drive transformative innovation?
I really think that it's essential to create an environment that promotes breakthrough thinking, Paul. And so, you know, with our teams, we really want to make sure that our individuals can contribute. We sort of start at the individual level. And so we do consider business chemistry. We try to make sure that we're sending out agendas and materials in advance for those that need to process in advance, but that we leave room for open conversation and connection in the moment. You know, there's little things that we do to make individuals feel like they can contribute. Beyond that, though, I would say we're actually quite explicit in two ways. We talk about the Breakthrough Manifesto principles explicitly with our teams. So we'll say things like, I think we need to check our edge here. Are we being bold enough? Are we trying new things? Or we'll say, I think this is a time we need to not play nice. Are we actually calling out truth here? Are there issues that are perhaps being tucked under a rug that we need to bring out? So that's one way that we actually make this thinking explicit. We use the language. The second way is we use the methods. The methods that we put in the book are methods that we actually use every day with our teams. And these are things that you use in combination. You mix and match them. I like to think about it a little bit like ingredients in your kitchen. You know, sometimes I'm baking a cake. I need different ingredients for that than if I'm trying to make a wonderful savory sauce. But you can have the core things that are essential to make a cake, and you always need those, but then you can add in different ingredients and change it up as you go. So using the methods every day with your teams is a great way to promote breakthrough.
I got to tell you, personally, I'm feeling energized around this discussion and the power of breakthrough. I know folks who are listening are feeling the same. What would be some practical advice when we leave the podcast and you go back with your team in your daily life? What are some things that people can do to kind of get started to catalyze innovation in their own personal worlds?
I think one thing I would recommend for everybody is to not be passive when it comes to innovation. I think sometimes we think innovation is just this magical thing that sort of hits us up the side of the head. Oh my gosh, I just had a light bulb go off. It's this aha moment. And that does happen sometimes to people, and that's fantastic when it does. But most of the time, you need to work for it. And so number one thing is stop waiting for innovation to happen to you. Go seek it out. And that could be as simple as going and changing your routine to expose yourself to new ideas, to meet new people. You know, we try every time we have to go to a city for an event, we try to visit something locally. That might be a museum, it might be a special restaurant, but something that is outside of our normal day-to-day routine. That can be a great start to get your mind churning. Suzanne?
I think I would say what people can do immediately is just start asking more questions and getting really curious. I mean, everywhere you go, everything you can do, you can start asking, well, why is it this way? Why should it be this way? What if it was different? You know, maybe I'm limiting my ideas too much. Maybe what I think is true is not actually true. And if it weren't true, how would that open up the possibilities for how I could solve a problem differently? And I think if people get in the practice of questioning their own assumptions in every situation, they're going to just immediately be one step closer to getting to a breakthrough mindset.
Suzanne, just on your point about asking questions and going back to why innovate, I think sometimes people innovate because they have to. They're not given a choice. You know, something changes around them. They don't have a choice. I think where we see opportunity is to intentionally seek opportunities to innovate, which requires asking those questions. And, you know, we're not trying to change things just because we're bored. We're really trying to change things because we don't want to settle. There may be better ways to do things, and that if we're not asking those questions and being curious, we won't realize they're there.
Your last comment there, Kim, was making me really kind of ponder. And you mentioned earlier about the effect of us going through COVID as a society. And that was really a catalyst for innovation. And, you know, it was very easy to get in, I'm thinking of my own experience, my own life, a routine, you know, of showing up to work and to doing the things that I've always done. I wound up losing 30 pounds during COVID. And because working from home and being off the road and being able to control what I was eating and control how I was exercising, it was a way to spark something very different. I thought that was amazing. And to me, I was thinking, you know, gosh, wouldn't it be great if you could spark innovation without the burning platform to innovate? I also like the saying, you know, that growth happens at the edge of your comfort zone. You have to be pushed outside of your comfort zone to actually grow, you know, however that is, emotionally and mentally and physically. And so help us think in your daily lives, how do you innovate just day in and day out, even when you're not forced to innovate, you know, kind of innovation for the sake of innovation or innovation for the sake of growing?
The pushing yourself is a big part of check your edge. And I love that because it is possible that we have all sorts of potential beyond what we're aware of. And if we don't try, we don't know. We're sort of assuming that everything we have is all that we could be and all that we could do. And I will say for me, when I'm at work, I will often ask those questions that Suzanne's suggesting, like, do we have to do it this way? What if we did it this other way? What would it take to make this other thing be the best way to do it? And that mental exercise not only reveals some interesting pathways that maybe we didn't consider, but it makes work more interesting. It actually helps you to engage with what you're doing on a deeper level and really appreciate sometimes the changes you could make, but also sometimes appreciate why is it the way it is now? And I find that my level of happiness with what I do is really increased when I try to push that edge at work. Personally, I try to do things that are challenging in different ways than I'm used to. I'm studying right now to be a helicopter pilot, and oh my goodness, talk about stretching your brain in new ways and just thinking about the mechanics of aerodynamics and how propellers interact with the air. And yes, it's stimulating my brain and helping me grow, but I found now that I'm taking it back into my work life. And so I was on a call just yesterday where I was comparing the dynamics that this team was going through to how you have to sort of use the pedals to counteract the torque. And I was just thinking about the business problem in a whole new way because I had this life experience that was enhancing it.
In the day-to-day life, I don't know if anyone else is like me, where you sometimes feel like you're on a treadmill. You're just doing the things and doing the things. I'm a parent, so I'm like driving here and filling out this form and sending my kids to camp or whatever it is. And I really appreciate the moments to take a step back and think about, why am I actually doing all of these things? And where do I want to be going? And am I going there? Or am I really just running on a treadmill and going nowhere at all and just doing lots of things all the time? So I find that in small ways, trying to get more creative to challenge assumptions and do all of that is really, really important. I also have found that these types of principles and techniques can really help us even in solving for the biggest challenges in our personal lives. So for me, that was a divorce that I got very creative about that happened 13 years ago. And by applying a lot of these same principles about how to think about divorce differently and what if we didn't do it the way everyone else does, has allowed my family to stay intact, has allowed my children to live with both of their parents for their entire growing up time, even though we got divorced from each other 13 years ago. And so I have seen the power in my own life, and I consider the way in which our family has navigated that huge challenge to be my greatest accomplishment. And it was through using these same kinds of techniques and principles that we arrived there.
And we will be talking through Suzanne's story and the book that she wrote about that process on an upcoming podcast. So I'm excited, Suzanne, to dig into that a lot more.
Me too.
I tell you, listening to both of you studying to be a helicopter pilot and reimagining how to approach a topic like divorce, you know, work on how to create the perfect chicken piccata seems like very, very underwhelming, but it's been amazing to listen to you both. This is the second book you've written together. How did you approach working together on this book? What worked? Obviously, you have a great rapport with one another, and it was successful the last time, and it's successful this time. What worked about that? And then, you know, for folks who are thinking about this, you know, what didn't work?
Well, one of the things that was different about this book was we wrote it without ever getting together in person, which is just a sign of the times, right? We had one lunch. I don't know if you even realize this, Kim. We had one lunch while writing this book, and we didn't even really talk much about the book during that lunch. But the rest of this we did together over Zoom and by, you know, writing things and sending them back and forth with each other. But we started the process with a series of sort of extended Zoom calls where we got together and we pressed record and we just talked with each other about the principles and, you know, why do we have this principle and why is it hard to do and why is it so important and where have we seen it happening in teams and with the clients that come in to work with us. And we talked through all of those. And once we felt that we sort of were reasonably on the same page, we went off and both drafted some chapters and then traded and came back together. And it worked really well. One of the things that I suppose, looking back, we probably could have predicted but didn't, was that we ended up writing, like, using different structures. You know, Kim's chapters were all structured in one way and mine were in a different way, which for a book, you know, is not really very cohesive. So we had to do some rework that was frankly somewhat painful just to make sure that we were producing something that was going to make sense to people so they wouldn't feel that they were in the middle of a sort of chaotic process.
I remember that moment, Suzanne, because I ended up printing out all of our chapters and laying them out on the floor of my house so that I could, I'm such a visual person, so I could visually see where are we aligned, where are we misaligned, what's too long, what's too short, what's structured with subsections. Like, it was a very pivotal moment. And yes, it involves some additional work, but I'm pretty happy with where it landed as a result.
Me too.
There is one other question I think we should ask, which is, Paul, how do you think about breakthrough? Like, what does breakthrough mean for you and how do you see it in your life?
That is a good question. I do feel like I get too complacent or too set into my routine and almost even crave difference for difference sake. And it's funny because I'm kind of like a Jekyll and Hyde sort of a thing where I really love original people, you know, people that show up or act in a way or bring something to the table that you didn't expect or you don't expect or doesn't seem to fit the mold. I love that feeling. And that's who I tend to surround myself with. And I'd like to be seen as that kind of a person. Yet I find that I can get into a routine or I can get into, you know, ordering the same thing at a restaurant or doing the same thing when I come to work, and it drives me crazy. And so for me, you know, doing something innovative or coming up with a different idea or coming at something from a different perspective, it just feels refreshing. And so, you know, that's why the book is so interesting to me, because it really gives very tangible, tactical, practical things to do to kind of help break that mold and help me self-energize the things that I really like to do and how I like to show up.
I love that, Paul.
Well, thank you both. I have to say, I learn something every time I speak to you, and your energy is contagious. I really appreciate, and speaking on behalf of everyone, thank you for sharing these 10 principles to spark transformative innovation. And I really appreciate mostly the practical nature, you know, like how to demystify innovation. Like we said at the beginning, it's a wonderful book. I can't wait to hear feedback from how folks are utilizing these in their daily lives.
Thanks, Paul. Really, really appreciate it and really appreciate all the support from you. And one thing we should say actually in the making of this book is that the Deloitte Greenhouse is global and we really tapped into the global community to get stories to enhance this and bring it to life. And so a big thank you to the global community of the Deloitte Greenhouse for all of their contributions to Breakthrough.
Thank you so much for joining us. We will see you again next Thursday at 6 p.m. For more information about the Chamber and our podcast, please visit us at ghwcc.org.